SavantWealth.com. Savant Wealth Management. Wise counsel.
And the choice of Belarusian people.
Ms. Tikhanovskaya said President Alexander Lukashenko had lost all legitimacy. She's formed a 35-member council to organize a peaceful transition of power. Mr. Lukashenko has branded some members Nazis. The Democratic Party in the United States has formally nominated Joe Biden for president on the second evening of its virtual national convention. He was proposed through video speeches from states around the country. Participants included two former presidents, Bill Clinton and Jimmy Carter. Mr. Clinton described the nominee as a down-to-earth, get-the-job-done guy, and he criticized President Trump.
If you want a president who defines the job as spending hours a day watching TV and zapping people on social media, he's your man. Denying, distracting, and demeaning works great if you're trying to entertain or inflame. But in a real crisis, it collapses like a house of cards. COVID just doesn't respond to any of that.
British and European Union negotiators have resumed talk on a post-Brexit deal on the future relationship. The EU Commission says it needs to be agreed by the end of October if it's to be ratified to take effect in time for Britain's transitional alignment with the EU, which expires at the end of the year. World News from the BBC. The Thai government has issued arrest warrants for six protest leaders who called for reform of the monarchy as part of sweeping political change. The demand was made last week at a rally at Thammasat University near Bangkok. Discussion about the monarchy's role in politics is severely restricted in Thailand. Anyone convicted of insulting the royal family faces 15 years in jail. Police in the US city of Portland have clashed with protesters who smashed windows and attempted to set fire to an office. Police declared the gathering of about 200 people to be a riot and made a number of arrests. There have been nightly protests in Portland since the killing of George Floyd by police in Minneapolis nearly 3 months ago. The Prime Minister of Australia, Scott Morrison, has said that he would like to make coronavirus vaccinations mandatory for all Australian citizens. He was speaking after his government signed an agreement with the Anglo-Swedish company AstraZeneca to manufacture a potential vaccine. Mr. Morrison described it as one of the most promising and advanced in the world. He said steps were being taken to make sure it's safe.
There won't be any cutting corners, there won't be any undue haste here. There will be the appropriate controls and protections that are put in place. And should we be in a position for the trials to be successful, we would hope that this would be made available early next year. If it can be done sooner than that, great. But we are very much in the hands of people wearing white coats.
The opposition Labour Party has warned that it's not clear whether Australia has the manufacturing capacity to produce the vaccine. It's accused Mr. Morrison of spin. The Supreme Court in India has ordered the Central Investigating Agency to look into the death of the popular Bollywood actor Sushant Singh Rajput. He was found in June at his home in Mumbai in what police described as a suicide. His death led to a frenzy of speculation among his fans and fellow actors. BBC News.
Welcome to The Compass on the BBC World Service and our continuing series on the senses, exploring how tiny defects in our sensory systems can have enormous consequences on how we perceive the world. I'm Guy Leshtener, a neurologist working in the NHS in London. In this programme, smell and taste, two independent senses that are intimately linked to create a rich sensory experience.
Very, very, very strange way of meeting somebody.
Yeah.
Across a microphone.
Oh, how did I get here today? Oh, yes, I drove here. Yeah, I just had toast and just very plain.
In spring 2015, Joanne, from Newcastle in northeast England, develops a heavy cold and respiratory infection. After a few weeks, the cold disappears, but she's left with something much more unpleasant.
I started to notice a really bad, distorted smell. It could be between rotting flesh or sewage, really a foul, putrid smell. And as time went on, I just couldn't shake this smell away.
Joanne goes to her doctor who doesn't know what it is.
Give me various different medications and nasal sprays, and that went on for several months, and basically it just got worse and worse.
So it wasn't related to what you were expecting to smell. It was there sort of every waking minute of your life.
Yeah, that's right. Every waking moment.
And were there other distortions of your smell?
There were specific smells that were actually heightened. For instance, if I came in contact with cigarette smoke, cooked food, coffee or perfumes, they would all be heightened. So that putrid smell was just 20-fold. Even the smell of cut grass, I couldn't stand the smell of cut grass. I stopped walking my dog. I just couldn't bear being outside.
Smell and taste are intrinsically different from our other senses, vision, hearing and touch. Instead of sensing energy in the form of light, vibrations in the air or mechanical energy through our skin, with smell and taste, we're sampling chemicals in the air that we breathe or the food that we chew. Our sense of smell, olfaction, is a pretty sophisticated sensory system. The human nose can detect up to 1 trillion different scents. How we smell starts with odours, molecules in the air which we suck up through our nostrils. At the back of the nose is a little patch of skin the size of a postage stamp, with a layer of special neurons called olfactory receptors. Around 400 different receptors detect different chemicals in the air. When stimulated, the combination of these receptors allows the brain to recognize an odor. But for Joanne, the smells of daily life are unbearable.
I just basically wanted to sleep all the time because that was my only escape from this.
I mean, it must have been a deeply isolating experience for you.
Oh, really, really distressing because nobody knew what the problem was.
Eventually, Joanne is referred to an ear, nose and throat specialist who diagnoses
parosmia.
Parosmia describes a distortion of smell, so you're smelling something from the environment around you, so let's say the smell of a rose and you depict that as a rotten cabbage.
Professor Carl Philpott is a consultant ear, nose and throat surgeon based in Norfolk in the east of England and a trustee of the UK smell and taste charity Fifth Sense.
One of the things about smelling is its pattern recognition. And so each smell receptor is genetically coded to recognise a certain molecule. And so most things that we're kind of smelling, we don't smell just one molecule, we're smelling the combination of things together. So rose, good example, is estimated to be about 13 molecules make up the smell of rose. When we think about parosmia, which is smell distortion, is because you're only picking up some of the molecules of the whole mixture that depicts the smell they're trying to interpret. So if you take the smell of a rose, for instance, and those 30 molecules, if you knock out 7 of them, well, you're smelling something, but it's not a rose. And so you lose that pattern recognition.
It seems the cold that Joanne originally developed early in 2015 has attacked her olfactory nerve, resulting in this smell disorder. Getting a diagnosis is a relief, but that turns to despair as there's no cure and no idea if or when her sense of smell might return. Disorders of smell are pretty common, caused by damage to the olfactory nerve and receptors through infection, inflammation in the nasal passages or head injury. And of course, affecting many people infected with COVID-19. In contrast, disorders of taste are very rare.
I've become active again in the music group. I've played brass band concert music for 35 years. Folksy music like Ernst Mosch or Bohemian brass band music.
Walter is 65. And has just retired from a career in IT. He lives in southern Germany, and his passions are playing in a brass band, cooking and eating German cuisine.
Also, am liebsten esse ich gerne My favourite dish is veal steak with morel cream sauce and salad. I also cook that myself. The morel is a gourmet mushroom which grows around Easter. There are different types. There is the fire morel, the black morel.
Walter is a bit of a foodie.
You can dry, and whenever you want to make a good sauce, you can add these mushrooms.
But in 2017, after a procedure on his heart, he notices something wrong with his sense of taste.
It started sporadically with a metallic taste on the tongue. Then it was gone again. It appeared in waves, and over the months it got stronger. You can't say it's different when I eat meat or when I eat fish. That means I can taste sweet, sour, bitter, salty. I can also taste if I eat carrots or a pea or drink coffee. But it's always dominated by this metallic taste, just around the tip of the tongue.
Our sense of taste, known as the gustatory system, starts with taste buds spread over our tongue. As we chew, our food releases chemicals that begin to dissolve in our saliva. These are picked up by special sensory cells, taste buds, that can detect five different tastes: sweet, sour, salty, bitter, and savory, each in different locations on the tongue. These receptors send signals to the brain about what we're eating or drinking, far less complex than our sense of smell. Tests show that Walter's sense of smell is working properly. It's only his sense of taste that is distorted, which is very unusual. Professor Thomas Hummel runs the Smell and Taste Clinic at the University of Dresden in Germany.
It's the exception. Of all those people who come to a smell and taste clinic, I think we have like 10% of our cases, they have taste issues. So their smell is okay, but taste, gustatory function is disturbed.
For many of his patients, there's no obvious reason for the sensory malfunction. For others, head injury or surgery can trigger it.
For instance, there was recently a survey on people with taste dysfunction after tonsillectomy, and about 30 to 40% of these patients after surgery, they had taste disorders, which is really large. And then in a smaller amount of patients, we also see drugs that would cause taste disturbance. And one of the more frequent causes is here chemotherapy.
Why certain drugs cause taste disturbance, also known as dysgeusia, isn't clear. Walter's doctors don't know if his condition is caused by tablets he takes for diabetes or something else.
One of the things that I very frequently hear is that they often complain of a metallic taste. Is there any particular reason why we seem to get this common distortion of taste?
There are so many question marks around taste, I feel a little bit ashamed to talk about that. But it's very badly understood. With metallic dysgeusia, there are a couple of cases saying that some components in the saliva, some proteins in the saliva, are not right. And this is then what might cause these metallic tastes.
When you've identified somebody who has a clear, isolated taste disorder, are there any specific treatments that you can offer them?
So people have a nutritional deficit on zinc. If you supplement them with zinc, then also their taste function normalizes. But the number of studies when it comes to therapies in taste disorders, they're relatively small.
And of the patients that you see, what proportion find that their taste normalizes subsequently?
When we follow up our patients after 1 year or so, 10% or so, maybe even less, they still say that it has not resolved. So when people have taste disorders, they typically also resolve.
And Walter is prepared to sit it out.
My wish is, of course, that the taste returns, so that when I cook, I can fine-tune the flavor of the sauce. Also the salad dressing, so I can bring out the finer nuances and not just the rough version. And that I can taste the wine properly again on the tongue. So in that respect, this is what I wish for. but I have to be patient.
Back in Newcastle, North East England, Joanne is seeking treatment for her smell disorder.
Everything was smelling rotting to me. You know, I'd be sitting there with a handkerchief over my nose, trying to breathe through my mouth instead of my nose. People would just make fun of me. And I even had somebody say, well, at least you're not deaf or blind.
Finally, she's put in touch with Professor Carl Philpott.
There are things out there that we can try that suggest may have an effect. One of the key problems that we've got is that the gold standard of the randomised controlled trial is sort of lacking in a lot of the treatments that have been tried.
He suggests Joanne tries a trial drug used for asthma, and this has results.
This tablet I took, more or less within 1 or 2 weeks, suppressed that putrid smell. You can also do smell training, which I believe that really helped me as well.
By practising the act of smelling, you may be causing changes in your olfactory bulb, the entry point of all these signals from the nose.
So, at the moment, where are you in terms of your journey?
I would say I was about 80% better than what I was in 2015. I don't smell a putrid smell, however, I don't have normal smells back to 100%.
What have your doctors said about the likelihood of everything returning to normal?
Well, back when I was first diagnosed, they said basically if it didn't come back within 6 months, it probably wouldn't. However, it's taken probably about 4 years to get to where I am.
Are you hopeful?
Very hopeful. I think it just takes a very long time for it to return to normal.
Both Joanne and Walter know what normal smell and taste is. After enjoying it most of their lives, illness, injury or medication has disturbed their sensory systems. But not everyone is aware of what they don't have.
Hello.
Hello.
Hiya.
Dawn,
hiya. Hello.
Hi,
pleased to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Hi,
Abby. Hi.
Come in, come in.
I'm in Dorset, southwest England, with Abby, who's 15, and her mum, Dawn.
One of the big things with Abby was when she was very little. She was quite a good little toddler, no real issues. And the only problem we ever had was at dinner time, breakfast time, when she'd be really naughty.
I didn't like it.
She would play up at nearly every meal time. And that was really frustrating for us. And it took some years to realise that she just wasn't interested in food. As soon as she sat down, she'd start yawning and stretching, which we knew was, I'm not going to eat what you put in front of me.
I am not going to eat my dinner until that.
And it just always felt like a massive argument. Sweet stuff, she'd be very interested. Now I look back on it, and anything really sweet or anything really salty. And, you know, when you've got a toddler, the last thing you want to do is put loads of salt and pepper and things in their food.
Concerned about Abby's eating habits and the fact that she's snoring a lot, Dawn takes her to the doctor, who puts it down to normal toddler behaviour. Abby is about 4 when Dawn suddenly realises what the problem is.
One day we were walking, we live in the countryside, so we were walking to school, and a silage tractor came past, and it absolutely stank. It was awful. And I sort of looked at Abby and I realised there was no facial expression. I looked at the other children around us and they're all gasping and holding their noses. And I thought, I think she can't smell.
Did you talk to your husband at that point?
We spoke about it and we started to realise that she'd never actually said, oh, you know, when children go to the toilet for the first time and they get, oh, that stinks. And we'd never had any of that, not once.
The doctor suggests they do a taste test at home.
We put a blindfold on her and we gave her lots of different foods that she ate all the time and then foods that she didn't. And she just didn't recognise anything. But as soon as you took the blindfold off, she was like, oh, it's my yoghurt. I gave her carrot and she was saying, is it mashed potato? But I think what she was getting was the texture of mash rather than the taste.
Abby's sense of taste is entirely normal. She can detect the sweet of sugar, the sourness of a lemon.
but it's our sense of smell that really gives food its added dimension, its flavour. And that's what Abby is missing.
I'm Dana Small. I'm a professor in the Department of Psychiatry at Yale University School of Medicine. There are two ways to smell, through the nose, orthonasally, as when you smell a rose or smell food cooking on the barbecue, and retronasal olfaction, which occurs when you are eating and the air from your mouth goes up into the nasal cavity.
So as you eat, smell from your mouth passes up into the nose. This information is combined with a taste, texture, and temperature of the food to create flavour. Without a sense of smell, Abby's missing a vital ingredient and has to rely on another of the senses, mouth sensation, to bring her food to life.
I really like red pepper. It doesn't really have a taste to it. It's kind of just like watery, just like it's got a nice texture. That's why I don't like mushrooms, because they're slimy. It makes me think of like eating a slug.
Do you remember, Abby, when you first realised that there was an issue with your smell?
It kind of kicked in when, like, I started properly understanding about school and stuff. And, like, we would walk past, like, the corridor and everybody would be like, oh, fish and chips today. And it's like, I'm like, how do you know that? Like, they're cooking behind the kitchen door, how do you know that? And they're like, oh, you can smell it. And I'm like, what? It was really confusing at first, and then I just felt, like, left out. Because it came into conversation, like, so much about, like, food. I couldn't relate to any of it. I made a couple people do the jelly bean test, like...
If you blindfold somebody and then put the flavoured jelly bean in their mouth, hold your nose, you can taste it's ultra-sweet, but that's all you can taste. Yeah. And as you open your nose and breathe in, all of a sudden you just get overwhelming strawberry flavour. And it's really amazing to sort of put yourself into Abby's shoes for a little while.
People are like, so this is how you taste everything, like, pretty much. But yeah.
But how do we perceive flavour? How do we integrate these signals? Taste from the tongue, smell from the nose, and sensation from the mouth.
The flavour is really interesting. It's a combination of illusions. All of these three systems have separate peripheral receptors, and they are distinct and have separate pathways to the brain.
The insula, a small area of cortex buried deep behind our ears, is the major site of olfactory processing. But it sits next to areas of the brain responsible for sensations from the mouth. There are also direct connections from here to taste areas and areas processing memory and emotion.
Flavour emerges from the interaction between all of these areas. And so it's the brain that's responsible for the illusions. So really, you can say flavour is in the brain, but it's really a network of areas.
So this network of brain regions also includes these areas processing memory and emotion. The strong association of smells or tastes with moments in time is something many of us will experience. Doctors think Abby's missing sense of smell, known as anosmia, absent since a very young age, may be caused partly by an obstruction in her nose, preventing smells reaching that crucial odour-sensing area at the top of her nose. She's hoping an operation in the coming months might improve things.
After all these years, and we might finally have that opportunity of being able to smell, and it would be so weird. Because people say that, like, grass has a smell, and that's mad to me. It's like, but grass is like everywhere. How can you even recognise it as a smell?
Smell and taste, these two powerful senses, working together, but often dismissed as less important, less high profile than the other senses. But they're crucial to our survival, signalling danger, nutritional value, feeding into pleasure and disgust. So important that they're directly wired into the parts of our brain responsible for memories and emotion.
The memories, that they're one of the big things for me. You know, I can go out and I can smell a smell, and it takes me straight back to a place and a time. And that's one of the things for Abby that I think she hasn't got that. She'll leave home and I won't be here to check that she doesn't smell and her food's not off. And she'll get boyfriends and she'll want to give them a hug and she'll want to wear their shirt and know how they smell. And I want her to have all of those things.
Yeah, we've got, like, teenage relationships and stuff. And, like, my best friend, she's like, oh, I love it when, like, he gives me a hoodie or something because it, like, smells like him. It's like, what? Why would you appreciate that? Wouldn't it just be, like, sweaty or something? But, like, apparently, like, it's a really nice thing to have. It, like, links them together almost, and it's, like, I'd like to be able to have that when I'm older.
Final question. So, what would you say to people out there who can smell?
I'd say just appreciate it and, like, treasure it.
I'm Guy Leschziner, and this BBC World Service programme was produced by Sally Abrahams. In the last of this series on the senses, we look at synesthesia, an extraordinary condition where senses merge, enabling some individuals to hear colour or taste words.
Distribution of BBC World